From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the very first day of November 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vegg. She's at Stuart Peterson. I'll remind you to dial in at 800-898-1065 to pick up your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference or just to go online at willag.org or farmassetsconference.com, either place. And you can order them online for just $35. The Farm Assets Conference is the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving. That's the 21st day of this month in Normal, Illinois. Great lineup. You can see all the details online more a bit later in our program. And as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast, too. That with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. Buy those tickets for the Farm Assets Conference. It's coming up on Tuesday, the 21st of this month, so don't wait. Register online at willag.org right now or by calling 800-898-1065. Now, we're joined by Jackie Vank. She's from Stuart Peterson. Hi, Jackie. How are you this afternoon?
Oh, I'm pretty darn good. Can't complain too much.
That's good. What's your sense of the commodity markets at this point?
Well, I think, you know, we just finished out the month of October. And, of course, we had first notice day for November beans, which means right now that November beans have no limit on them. You know, they can do whatever they really want to. So it's not a great place to be sometimes. But when we look back on October, we saw corn down 7, beans up 7, and wheat down anywhere from 19 to 23, from hard red to soft spring. So, you know, it's a situation where at this point in time, you know, in the middle of harvest, it's a tough one. And then you've got, you know, South America also entering into the picture, and I'll get into that a little bit later. But one of the things I thought that was very interesting for October was that grain that was traveling by freight train turned negative the very beginning of the month, and actually ended the month down 10% compared to normal. So, you know, what that says to me, Todd, is that these farmers are hanging on for a higher price. And I say beware, because if you want a higher price, you better be willing to take advantage of any good bounces that we would get between now and, let's say, mid-December to the end of December, you know, when South America actually starts doing some type of harvesting. And I think that probably one of the most important things is to watch for any change in basis. You know, when you look at current basis, we've got Central Illinois at about 10 under, Decatur, Indiana, 31, Des Moines, 65, Lincoln, 75, Omaha, 80. And these are all after better days for futures yesterday. And so I think it's extremely important to keep track of what's going on in your local basis market, because if you see the market go up 6 and you see the basis get wider by 6, you're not gaining. And then you've got to really be serious about this. For right now, we've been fairly fortunate on the bean side. You know, we're moving along. We're getting through this glut that we've got, and it hasn't changed a whole lot. So that's a good thing.
So just for a clarification point, when you say rail has turned negative, you mean the number of bushels is down 10%, right?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
What about export inspections? How are we holding up this year?
Ooh, well, I don't think many people will like to hear these numbers. Corn is actually down 45% compared to a year ago. You know, the decline estimate is about 19%. We've got soy down 10% compared to a year ago, and probably a lot of people are unaware of that, you know, because it appears that we've really got some great stuff going on, and we do. Wheat is down 4%. And so, you know, those are all concerns. Now, when you look at tomorrow's export sales, remember, you know, our final numbers always by what has been shipped. Export sales themselves tomorrow are estimated at somewhere between 31 and 42 million bushels for corn, 53 and 68 million bushels for beans. Very, you know, they sound like great numbers, but they're below last week. And so there, too, is another part of beware, because if things, you know, if the dollar continues to strengthen, and we're at 94.75, somewhere in that neighborhood today, you know, it makes it tougher for us. And what it also does is it also brings out Brazilian selling, Argentinian selling. And so our guys have really got to be on their toes as to what they're doing when it comes to managing old crop.
What do you think about managed money at this point? Where do they stand?
Well, they're 97,000 short on soft red wheat, 192,000 short on corn, and 40,000 long on beans. When you looked at open interest yesterday, we saw open interest actually go up about 20,000 in beans. And so that's a situation where, you know, years ago we could watch it in a day or two, it would give you an idea of what direction the market was really going to go. Today, that's not realistic at all. But the managed money is still hanging in there. I mean, 192,000 on corn sounds like a lot, but it's not. We can get a lot higher than that when it comes to the negative side of things. And you would expect that's probably where they'd be at this time of year, just because of the fact that we're in harvest.
In just a week and a day, the USDA will release its WASDE, or World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, and update the crop production numbers for the month of November. Generally, we have everything in the bin. That's not the case this year. Will we have an opportunity here to change yields on corn or beans?
Yes, and that is the one big question that I have in my mind is, will we actually, most people, according to what we're hearing from in the countryside, you know, I would expect that we would see a higher corn yield than what we saw in the October report with how slow things are. And, you know, when you look at where is it really slow, it's slow in the northern hemisphere, okay, in North Dakota, South Dakota, and so Minnesota. Those are the areas where often you will see corn left to stand to dry down because, you know, we don't have the best prices in the world at the moment, and that's not an unusual thing to happen up there. So I think that whether the USDA will actually change anything because of that, I doubt it, to be truthful. But I do think we may not see as big an increase in corn yield as we're thinking. It's probably, you know, we're probably going to end up somewhere between 170.5 and 172. You know, it's not going to be a huge change. But it may not be the change we were expecting.
What's your assessment of conditions in South America, Brazil and Argentina?
Well, you know, one of the things that we saw happening down there, you know, we've got planting, of course, has been delayed a great deal on full season corn. And so therefore, we might actually end up seeing more acres go over into beans. Safrinha corn, which is usually 60% of the crop, of the corn crop, could move as high as 75% if we don't start moving ahead on planting that. And, you know, when you look at soy, you know, we complain a lot here about prices, but I'll tell you what, they got tight margins down there. Currently, soy is about $8.15 a bushel, if you look at an average across thing. Their cost is $7.40, okay? So that leaves you, what, 75 cents? And their break-even is 43.5 bushels to the acre. But the later the planting gets, the higher the insecticide and the fungicide costs go. And, you know, at this time last year, when you looked at beans in Brazil, we were at 10.20 a bushel. So, you know, this is a very difficult situation for them just in general to try and figure out what they're going in. And then, of course, I think one of the things that's been keeping us from being able to, anytime we move a little higher, we end up with resistance. Well, you know, the Brazilian real has gotten weaker. And basically, we've seen old crop and new crop sales pick up. Right now, they've got about 18 to 20% of the new crop sold. But this isn't compared to 35 to 40%, you know, in the past few years. So it's a real question as to what they're going to do. And at the moment, now, we, you know, hard for our guys to believe because, you know, we're not up that much. But their soy prices right now are the highest of the year. And it's all about the exchange between the Brazilian real and the dollar. And so, you know, it's a situation where we don't just experience harvest pressure, we experience exchange pressure too. It's just that here in the U.S., we can look at the board and we know where we are, minus basis, but they don't. Everything depends upon what the dollar does.
You know, we worry often about their exports out of Brazil and Argentina both. What about domestic usage there? I know they have a lot of livestock, and that gets a good portion of the corn in both crops. And ethanol is actually also used fairly heavily, and certainly heavily in Brazil. But normally, that's sugar cane, right?
Oh, it is. There's no question about that. Although right now they're actually going to be building three new flex plants, is what they call them. They are basically plants that can use sugarcane and remain open year-round, because when they get into the rainy season, when they can't take down sugarcane, then they can use corn. And so this is a big thing. Now, this is all going on in Mato Grosso. That's where everything is. Mato Grosso right now has just one corn-only ethanol plant. Very unusual for down there, but they're the largest producer of corn in South America. They've got six sugarcane only, and then they have three of them that have been retrofitted, which are sugarcane and corn, and now they'll have those three new flex plants. You know, they need about 230 to 345 to break even in order to operate. So it's not realistic to think that we're going to see ethanol plants anywhere else, probably in South America, other than in Mato Grosso, because they only really are profitable in areas where it costs so very much, you know, to actually transport your grain to get it to the market. Now, at the moment, corn is only $210, but by the time they get done with this whole thing, they're going to have a total investment of about $1 billion. So you can see they're serious about it. There's no question. It's just, you know, it costs $2 a bushel to move grain. I mean, they've got to find a different way to be able to utilize it. And so I think we'll see more of that. And then that has a backward impact on us because, you know, they are importers of ethanol from us. And so we have to be, you know, we have to pay attention to that side of things, too. It's just one of those double-edged swords, you know, that you need to watch, but it's there. The other thing that's going on down in Brazil, I think that's kind of interesting, is, you know, the real, like I said, was weaker, mostly because U.S. economy has gotten stronger. You know, we've got a potential for corporate tax cuts, a potential for rate increases, and therefore, you know, there's investment money coming into the United States that hadn't been coming here. And some of that is coming out of countries like Brazil, where they were doing investing there. So Temer, who is the president, I'll tell you, he's a dandy. He got hospitalized, and the real really took a dive, even though, you know, he's been so many corruption things, you'd think it would probably go up, but his actually took a dive. But he somehow convinced the Brazilian Congress to allow him to finish his term. And he did it by saying he was not going to act on reforming pensions or doing any other structural reforms. And basically why they didn't want it to do it, they want to do the reforms because they want to try and shore up the real so that the real doesn't fall apart. And it's interesting because Brazilian politicians are hungry to reduce pensions and workers' rights. Doesn't it sound a lot like the United States in a lot of places that we know of? Maybe one that we live in? You know, and so I think that just in general, they have things that, in fact, they're really pushing hard in the South. I talked about it a couple of weeks ago, secession, you know, about actually trying the three southern states. They want to get out of Brazil. That's just they want to become a nation by themselves because they just don't get any of the benefits of all the taxes that they pay. So there's a lot of similarities in a lot of places here in the United States compared to down there.
Hey, speaking of taxes, Argentina was under its new president, had changed its thought on taxing exports of commodity crops. How's that been working?
Well, you know, basically what it immediately did was it pushed the corn acres up, you know, because of the fact that they were really out of balance when it comes to being able to rotate crops. But they've really just started planting soy in Argentina now, and they only have 1.8% done. 60% of that is actually in the northern part, and they increased a lot of their wheat acres. So that reduced some of their soy acres too. But, you know, the better margins that they're currently experiencing on corn has just been pushing acres up. But it's likely that that's not going to happen this next year, you know, as we go into the 2019 crop for them, because as of today, on January 1st, their export tax is supposed to begin to fall 0.5% per month. And so if they don't take it away, you know, how politicians can be, but currently it's 30%, but it should fall to about 22% by the time they're ready to sell the new crop in 2019. That's a huge change. And so that's going to be a factor that's going to play into acres, of course, but it'll also play into us, you know, because they'll be looking at this, and they might be willing to sell new crop 2019 corn or beans, excuse me, for less than we might be excited about. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all turns out.
Always interesting to talk with you, Jackie.
Thank you, Ted. Have a great day.
You too. Jackie Vakes, of course, is with Stuart Peterson. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Visit us online at willag.org. There you can buy your tickets to the Farm Assets Conference. It's just 20 days away now, on the 21st of the month in Normal, Illinois, at the Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. For $35, you get a day-long event that includes a discussion of the Farm Bill with Republican and Democratic staffers from the Hill. We'll also have Craig Gunderson, agricultural economist from the U of I, on hand for that conversation. We'll talk about the commodity markets with Kirk Kimmel, Joe Vaclavic, Chip Nellinger, Matt Bennett, Bill Gentry, Jim McCormick, and Todd Hubbs. Yes, there are seven of them, and you hear them regularly here on our air to talk about the futures markets. Eric Snodgrass, who talks with us on Friday about the weather, will join us for a discussion and an outlook for Brazil and Argentina in particular. And Bruce Sherrick will be there, too, from the TIA Center for Farmland Research. And we'll talk about precision conservation management. Do you know what that means? It's simple enough. It's how ag econ works with conservation management. Do things like cover crops make sense? Or no-till? Or anything else that has to do with conservation? Gary Schnitke and Dale Latz have been studying that for a couple of years now, and they've got some really good information for you. The Farm Assets Conference is the 21st day of November. Buy your tickets online at willag.org, farmassetsconference.com, or by calling 800-898-1065 during regular business hours. 800-898-1065. Don't wait. Do it right now. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, let's start in South America and work our way northward, meaning we'll start in Argentina and then we'll end up right here in the United States. Begin with Argentina and their growing conditions, or at least the start of their season.
Well, the weather has been favorable there. A good mix of weather has occurred. A few weeks ago, there was a lot of chatter about too much rain falling in parts of the country, and that was true for a little while. But just like last year when they talked about too much moisture there, the crops came through it very well, and the same thing is going to happen this year. So the crop is often running very well. We are watching Argentina a little closely, though, at the moment, because there is a La Nina in the making, and La Nina events, when they're developing, do tend to rob moisture from Argentina. So a little later this month and into December, we might start seeing some dryness evolve. But for right now, everything's just peaches there.
And on the southern parts of Brazil and the growing regions in that nation?
Most of southern Brazil has had a good mix of rainfall here recently. It's been a little too wet, perhaps, in some of the interior south. Some of those areas have picked up on multiple inches. In fact, I think over the past 7 days, we've seen anywhere from 3.5 upwards to more than 9 inches of rain in some locations in southern Mato Grosso do Sul and western and northern parts of Paraná and neighboring Paraguay. And so some of those areas just really need to dry down. They're actually seeing dry weather today and tomorrow, and that'll be great, but more rain is coming up this weekend. And, you know, when we reach a little further north into the most important soybean-producing areas of Mato Grosso and Goiás, these areas are seeing quite a mix of weather. There's been sufficient rainfall in Goiás to support the crop favorably. But in Mato Grosso, the rainfall is very erratic, and some areas are getting moisture of significance and many others are not. And with temperatures still running upper 80s through the 90s on a daily basis, we're just not getting enough moisture to counter the evaporation, let alone improve the moisture profile so that these crops can handle a few days of dry and warm weather. So it's a very tenuous situation. Some of the crops are still trying to emerge and establish well after being delayed for a few weeks. And the forecast is still offering a daily occurrence of showers in this region, but the rain amounts may be a little bit too light still over a fair amount of the coming 4 or 5 days, and then might improve early next week.
In the United States, Midwestern corn farmers are still trying to get their crop out. Will they have open conditions?
I think that there will be not such a great environment for field work in the coming week for areas coming up out of the Delta and into the eastern Midwest. These areas will probably have a relatively high frequency of light precipitation. It's not going to be heavy or soaking, but it will occur often enough that field progress will be slow. And now in the western part of the Corn Belt, in areas like western Iowa, parts of Missouri and Kansas, Nebraska, I think they will see the most aggressive farming activity. The weather is going to be relatively dry. What brief periods of precipitation do come along is just not likely to last long enough to be a big issue. And then in the upper Midwest, we've already put some snow on the ground in portions of Minnesota and Wisconsin, and we've got more coming in that same corridor, in fact, starting back in North Dakota and headed over towards Michigan. The frequent occurrence of snowfall there and the likelihood that persistent cool weather is going to be around really raises some questions as to how well some of that late-season harvesting is going to proceed.
Thank you so much, Drew.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner, of course, is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.